and welcome to The Bunnycast, the podcast dedicated to Bunny McGarry, the Dublin Trilogy, and beyond. I'm Quaid McDonald, author of the books, and first things first, let's deal with the massive question that has been bamboozling readers for over 2 years now, namely, how do you say my name? I've just said it, but I'll happily do so again. Quive. It's Quive. Yes, I know, Gaelic is a beautiful yet ridiculous language. Other authors have lofty goals like making the New York Times bestseller list or having a movie made of their work. I'd honestly be thrilled if the most frequent question I get asked is, when is your next book coming out, as opposed to the whole name thing. In fact, at the moment, in order of frequency it goes, how do you say your name? I have further questions about your name, and then, a distant third, when is your next book coming out? Actually, I should include on that list, do you know how many books are normally in a trilogy? And yes, folks, I do. Please stop asking me. One's a prequel, that's why there's four. It makes perfect sense, okay? Good. Now, anyway, let's crack on with the podcast. First, I should explain why we're doing this. Well, currently, the uber-talented Morgan C. Jones is narrating the audiobooks of all my work, which has been absolutely fantastic. As well as the books, though, there's a couple of short stories and novellas knocking about too, and we wanted to do something with them, which is where the original idea for this podcast came about. So what we'll be doing is each episode will contain either a short story or a sample chapter from one of the books narrated by the brilliant Morgan, with an introduction from yours truly, where I'll discuss something about the books. In this episode, we thought we'd kick off with a short story, Dog Day Afternoon, as it is a good introduction to Bunny McGarry, who is undoubtedly the most popular character in the books. And also, it's a good intro to the character who is arguably the second most popular character, but more on her later on. First off, I should explain the man himself, Bunny McGarry. Where Bunny came from is he just sort of turned up in a man at one of those faces and refused to leave. He was honestly supposed to be a minor character and he all but took over the affair. I find him really compelling to write, and I think it's because every time I write a book with him in it, I feel like I discover something new and interesting about him. Initially, he was just this funny, drunken lunatic with a penchant for violence, but then, as the books continued on, it felt like I was discovering more and more about his life, about why he's ended up the way he is. He just kind of became fascinating to me. There's an undoubtedly tragic element to him, as we find out in the prequel, Angels in the Moonlight, that I think makes sense of his driving motivations. Amidst all the madness and mayhem, he has a good heart and a firm belief in right and wrong. And I think that is what people relate to. He starts out as a drunken brute who'll throw somebody out of a window, but at some point you find yourself pulling for him. It's an odd thing to say, but even as the author, I don't really feel like I control Bunny McGarry. I think he does what he wants and I just write it down. What he's not is a traditional hero. If James Bond is the guy at the bar with the square jaw and the tailored suit, ordering his martini, shaken and not stirred, Bunny's the guy leaning against it so he doesn't fall over, who has his flies open and is shouting abuse at the soccer on the telly. Thing is, I know a lot more people like him than I do James Bond. Bunny's a mess, and I think that's what most people are. Maybe that's why he ends up being somebody a lot of people feel like they relate to. I guess what he is very human. Maggie, on the other hand, is a lot of things, but human isn't one of them. She's a German shepherd dog. I was obsessed with the films like Turner and Hooch and K-9 growing up. There's something about the man and dog combo where the dog is the loose cannon that I just really love. I always wanted to do something like that, and when I did a crime writing module for the Masters in Creative Writing that I've actually never bothered to finish, one of the tasks they gave us was to write a short story where a detective meets a new partner slash sidekick. Everyone else wrote stories where their brilliant but troubled detective met the brilliant but troubled medical examiner over a brilliant but troubled corpse, and what I wrote is Dog Day Afternoon. So, I hope you like it. And without further ado, I shall hand you over to the dulcet tones of the wonderful Morgan C. Jones.
Dog Day Afternoon. Written by Quaive McDonnell. And read by Morgan C. Jones. 12:12 p.m. June 18th.
I need a dead dog.
People, thought Noreen. People really were the problem. If people were a bit easier to deal with, she'd probably have become a doctor like her father and his father before him, instead of being the unspoken family disappointment of a veterinarian. She really had tried to like people, but it was very hard to, based on the available evidence. War, famine, and the films of Adam Sandler. Animals, on the other hand, were infinitely more lovable. In fact, their only downside was that they were invariably owned by people. It was the Peter Principle on a massive evolutionary scale. Humanity had been promoted to the position of dominant species, a role they managed with utter incompetency. Take this specimen, for example, standing on the opposite side of the counter in a black sheepskin coat, which smelt like it hadn't been cleaned since the sheep had worn it. His large, bulbous face was a shade of red only meant for beetroot and heart attacks, and a lazy left eye only added to the impression of him being unhinged. To be fair, in other circumstances he'd probably have just looked intense as opposed to deranged, but those circumstances would have involved him not bursting into her surgery, demanding a dead dog.
"We don't have any dead dogs. Have you any that are looking a bit peaky?" He looked about 50 and was blessed with the kind of Cork accent that managed to lilt and grate at the same time, like somebody was trying to get a tune out of an industrial sander. "Sir, can I ask the nature of your inquiry?"
"I need a dead dog, and you're a vet. Now, can you help me or not?"
"Absolutely not. I'd like you to leave, or I'm going to call the Gardaí."
The man pulled an overstuffed wallet from his inside coat pocket and flipped it open to his official Garda ID.
"DS Bunny McGarry at your service. Now, about that dead dog, ideally an Alsatian, but I'll work with whatever you've got."
"Sure. Let me just rummage through my extensive collection of corpses out back, and I'll see what I can rustle up."
"Really?"
"No."
Bunny sighed heavily and leaned on the counter.
"This is no time for sarcasm, Doc. A Garda officer's life is in danger."
Noreen's mouth opened and closed without producing any words. DS Bunny McGarry glowered at her and then looked over her shoulder, presumably for somebody else to glower at. He'd be lucky. Darren had called in sick yet again. People.
"Look," said Bunny, looking at his watch, the anger in him seemingly subsiding, to be replaced by weariness. "I have 47 minutes to find a dead dog to take the place of a decorated police officer in front of a firing squad. But I should mention the police officer is also a dog."
"Ah," said Noreen, getting at least within waving distance of understanding.
"You need to wait. What kind of monster is putting a dog in front of a firing squad?"
"Well, I dunno. They're putting her down."
"That's normally done by a painless injection."
"Well, this one will definitely be painless because it's going to be given to a dead dog. At least it will be if you start helping. I tried driving up the M50, but you can never find roadkill when you need it. All I got was half a rabbit, and that's going to be a tough sell."
"Why is this dog being put down?" asked Noreen.
"It's not important."
"It is if you want my help."
"It'll sound bad when you hear it."
"Try me."
"She sort of attacked a few children."
"Oh.
See, I told you it'd sound bad. There were mitigating circumstances."
"Which were?"
"Well, she was high on drugs at the time."
"Is that normally a compelling legal defence?"
"She's a good dog. The best under force until some drug-peddling scumbag with a grudge found where she was kennelled and spiked her food with LSD.
"That's awful. Is she okay?"
"Ah, she's A1. Tip-top, other than the whole being on death row thing. I mean, I've been told she spends quite a lot of time staring at lights, but look, are you going to help me or not?"
Isn't there an appeal process?
He shook his head.
She went mad at the Gouda summer barbecue, snarled at a few kids and then shat in a bouncy castle that the commissioner herself had paid for.
He looked at his watch again.
We've got 46 minutes, or else the poor doggy is deader than disco.
What are you going to do with this dog once she is free?
I'd not thought that far ahead.
I'll only help if you can guarantee her a long and happy life.
Love, look at me,
he said, spreading his arms wide.
If I could provide that to any female, do you think I'd be standing here with a half-eaten kebab in my pocket, begging you for a dead dog? Now, are we dancing or not?
Noreen looked around and then leaned in.
We normally have one or two in the freezer, but the crematorium van came around yesterday.
Bunny ran his hands through his hair and puffed his cheeks out.
Where's the crematorium?
Nearest one is out on the Nace Road.
Fick it, too far. Any other vets nearby?
They'd have all
been collected at the same time by the crematorium van,
finished Bunny.
Bollocks!
He pushed himself off the counter with his hands and stared down at the floor.
Come on, Doc, walk with me here. Where can we find a German Shepherd-sized dead animal in central Dublin in the next 40-something minutes?
Well, said Noreen.
What?
Never mind. It's a ridiculous idea.
I'll take it.
But...
12:54 p.m, June 18th, Kilmainham Garda Station. Garda Patrick Lennox was making Noreen extremely uncomfortable. He didn't mean to. Quite the opposite, in fact. His teary brown eyes were filled with gratitude, and he'd already attempted to hug her a couple of times. Noreen did not like being touched by anyone in general, and tearful men in particular.
I really appreciate what you're doing, and you know how big a deal it is. I mean, you could get in all kinds of trouble for this.
Paddy, interjected Bunny. Stop saying that. There's a good lad.
Noreen finished filling out the clipboard full of paperwork and handed it back to Lennox. She gave it one last lingering look as she did so. He wasn't wrong. She could be struck off for this. She looked down again at the white sheet under which the body lay. She had met Bunny McGarry about 42 minutes ago, instantly disliked him, and was now committing a crime at his behest. She had never had the greatest taste in men.
And you're sure that the vet you normally use...
Relax, interrupted Bunny. He's been called home by a family emergency.
Do I want to ask?
Best not.
The door opened, and a fresh-faced female guard stuck her head in.
Paddy, Mara has just pulled up.
Oh, Christ.
Is that the vet?
Asked Noreen, her career flashing before her eyes.
No,
responded Bunny.
Worse, feck's sake. You'd think the assistant commissioner would have better things to be doing with his time.
But you said someone was coming to verify.
Yes, said Lennox. Someone being Sergeant McCullough, who'd just nodded the sheet and signed the form. Not Mara.
Noreen looked at Bunny.
He's right. That snivelling little prick would happily take a selfie with a corpse.
Jesus, said Noreen. He lifts that sheet and we're all done for.
Bunny started pacing back and forth.
All right, we're okay. Doc, you just follow my lead.
Noreen nodded. What choice did she have? Bunny stopped and looked at Lennox.
Paddy, you look terrified. We need grief.
Paddy attempted to make his face a mask of appropriate misery. He looked like Robert De Niro trying to pass a whole watermelon.
Christ, said Bunny. You're not exactly a great loss to the acting profession.
Sorry, Bunny. I'm trying. I just...
It's okay. Relax. Take a deep breath.
Lennox nodded and obediently complied. The breath exploded out of him a second later when Bunny punched him in the stomach. Bunny gently held him for a moment and then pushed him back into the chair in the corner, where Lennox sat doubled over, unable to speak. Bunny patted him sympathetically on the shoulder.
"Greater good, Paddy, greater good."
Bunny looked at Noreen.
"Just follow my..."
And the door opened. Bunny clasped his hands together as a short, balding man in a dress uniform entered.
"As we forgive those who trespass against us, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen."
"Amen,"
responded Noreen. The man, who she assumed was this Mara fella, awkwardly took his peaked hat off and reflexively joined in with them, blessing themselves.
"D.S. McGarry, what are you doing here?"
"I came to console Sergeant Lennox, sir. He's not taking this well."
Bunny nodded over at Paddy, who did indeed look like a man drowning in a sea of very personal grief. Mara looked down at the sheet.
"This was supposed to happen at precisely 1 p.m.
"The usual vet, Damien Hickey, was called away on a family matter, sir. Dr. Richards here kindly agreed to step in."
Noreen added nervously,
"Yes, I felt it best if we get things moving."
"Well, that's as may be, but I promised the commissioner I would verify proceedings properly. How do I know that animal is dead?"
Noreen's heart jumped into her mouth as Mara bent down towards the sheet.
"Oh, for feck's sake, Mara,"
said Bunny, nodding at Lennox.
"Have a heart, would you?"
Bunny roughly nudged the body with his foot.
"See? Dead."
"Nobody asked for your input, D.S. McGarry," snarled Mara. "Now get the hell out of my way."
Noreen didn't have to be an expert in reading people to see the obvious animosity that existed between the two men. Bunny placed himself between Mara and the sheet, and then leaned over and poked the body with his finger.
"He's not pining. He's passed on. He has ceased to be. He's expired and gone to meet his maker. He's shuffled off his mortal coil, run down the curtain, and joined the bleeding choir invisible. This is an ex-parrot."
Mara attempted to shove Bunny out of his way.
"Are you drunk, Bunny? Consider yourself on report. Now get out of my way. I..."
Bunny kept shifting himself to stay between Mara and the body, like a basketball player determinedly holding on to possession. Noreen took a deep breath and stepped forward. If she was getting struck off, she might as well go down swinging.
"What the hell is going on here?"
Her harsh tone caused Bunny and Mara to stop scuffling and look up at her. She pointed down at the body beneath the sheet.
"This poor animal has had to be put to sleep due to injuries it suffered in the line of duty. Is this how the Garda Síochána treats a fallen hero? No respect, no basic common decency. Instead, you," pointing at Bunny, "are using it for some tawdry comedy routine, and you," pointing at Mara, "wish to parade the poor animal's body through the streets like some deposed third world dictator. Shame on you. Shame on both of you. I think the press will be very interested to hear about this."
Mara backed away, as if punched in the chest.
"I'm sorry. I have to verify."
Noreen moved forward.
"I assure you, this animal is very dead."
"Technically not a lie."
"Or are you now questioning my professional competence as well?"
"No, no."
"Good. Then if that is all, excuse me, as I remove this animal and bring it to the crematorium to be disposed of in the appropriate, dignified manner."
"Right. Of course, sorry about... there's no need to bring the press into..."
"Good day, sir."
"Right, I..."
"I said good day,"
5:24 p.m. June 18th. Garda HQ, Phoenix Park. Mara placed his Cajun chicken wrap and his copy of the Evening Herald on his desk. It had been a long day. He'd not eaten since a few biscuits at this morning's policy meeting, and he had a Chamber of Commerce reception tonight, standing in for herself. The mess with the dog had been embarrassing. McGarry had been his usual buffoonish self. Ah well, not long now, and his retirement would finally come through, and the stain of having such a walking anachronism on the Garda payroll would be removed. He cracked open the seal on his wrap and flicked through the first couple of pages of the paper. 5:27 p.m. June 18th. Garda HQ, Phoenix Park. Health and Safety Incident Report. Garda Maureen O'Sullivan is to be commended for her quick thinking in administering the Heimlich manoeuvre to Assistant Commissioner Justin Mara, who was choking on a Cajun chicken wrap. Evening Herald, June 18th, page 4. Catnapped. The Irish National History Museum on Merrion Square was the site of one of the most bizarre crimes in Irish history today, as a stuffed model of a saber-toothed tiger was stolen from its display case. The theft occurred at 12:30 p.m. when a man wearing what visitors described as an improvised balaclava made out of a Tesco's bag for life walked in and used a hurley to smash open the display case. The animal was then removed, and the catnapper made his getaway. In an odd twist in the tale, the cat was returned unharmed just 2 hours later. The Gardaí are mystified, although one unnamed source did point out that it was a reading week at nearby Trinity College. 3:27 p.m. June 18th. O'Hagan's Pub, Baggot Street. Tara Flynn surveyed her domain. The lunchtime rush had been dealt with, and now there was the mid-afternoon lull before the post-work crowd barreled in and messed the place up again. She knew that busy was better, but there was still a part of her that enjoyed the quieter moments. It gave you a chance to catch your breath and have a bit of a chat with the customers. She noticed the familiar figure of Bunny McGarry shambling through the doorway and started pouring his usual stout. He was a creature of habit, and he'd no doubt been called an awful lot worse than that. He was not a bad sort, truth be told, once you got by the bluster. Besides, every good publican knew you could never have too many friends in law enforcement. Bunny unbuttoned his ever-present sheepskin coat and deposited himself on one of the high stools beside the bar.
"Usual, please, Tara."
"On its way."
And then Bunny's arse barked. Tara leaned over the bar to see a German shepherd sitting beside him on the floor.
"Have you made a friend, Bunny?"
"Something like that. Long story."
"Technically, we don't allow dogs in here."
"I'm legally blind."
"Oh, are you now?"
"I must be. Otherwise, I'd have noticed that those packets of cigarettes behind the bar don't have a custom duty stamp on them."
Tara could feel herself blush. Not something she was known for.
"I've got a few sausages left over from lunch if he's hungry."
"He's a she, and you're an angel."
Tara laughed as she topped the pint up and placed it in front of him.
"Finally found yourself a woman. What's her name?"
"Maggie, possibly named after the mad bitch of the same name."
In the corner of her eye, Tara noticed the bloke in the beanie hat and the Captain Birdseye beard, who'd been camped out in the cubbyhole with his two friends all afternoon. He was waving a 20-euro note at her from the far end of the bar. Tara rolled out her best fuck you glare.
"The lap dancers start at 6, love."
"I'm just looking for 3 heinies when you're done flirting with your da."
He then turned and leaned back against the bar, basking in his dazzling wit. Tara noticed that little twitch in Bunny's face. This was bad. The last time she'd seen that, Some bloke on his crimbo party who'd got handsy with one of the waiting staff had found himself with an ornamental Christmas tree shoved somewhere memorable.
"What did you say there, fella?"
Bunny actually smiled when he said it. This was very bad.
"Calm down, Grandad. I just..."
And then he stopped. Tara stopped. Bunny stopped. There'd been no music playing, but if there had been, it surely would have stopped. That's the kind of thing that happens when a German shepherd places its jaws around a man's crotch and growls. It wasn't loud. It didn't need to be. He spoke in a whisper.
"Fuck's sake, Grandad, get your dog off me."
Bunny took a slow sip of his pint before responding. It wasn't like the younger man was going anywhere.
"Couple of things. Firstly..."
Bunny whipped his wallet out.
"That's Detective Sergeant Grandad to you. And secondly, that's not my dog. She's just been let go from the force in less than ideal circumstances. I don't think you want me to give her an order right now. She has a bit of a problem with authority."
Maggie growled softly, as if to emphasise the point.
"By any chance, you're not carrying any illegal narcotics, are you?"
Captain Birdseye exchanged a worried look with his mates.
"No, you can't search me. I know my rights."
"Fair play. Good luck explaining them to the dog."
"I've nothing on me."
"Right so. Must be something else. Have your genitalia recently been in contact with a dead body?"
"No."
"Well then, unless your bollocks are made of Semtex, I'm out of ideas."
"Look, just..."
The words caught in his throat, as the dog tightened her grip on proceedings. His voice went up an octave.
"I might have a small bit of..."
"I'd get rid of it if I was you."
Slowly, very slowly, Birdseye reached into his pocket, took something out, and dropped it on the counter. Tara placed it in front of Bunny. About 3 joints worth, by her reckoning.
"Tut, tut, young people these days. And he seemed like such a nice boy. Seeing as I'm in a good mood, we'll let you off with a warning."
Nobody seemed more surprised than Bunny when the dog released her grip and calmly padded back to sit beside him. Birdseye nearly collapsed as he staggered for the door, followed by his 2 friends. Tara noticed his 20-euro note on the counter and placed it in the charity box.
"And a big thank you from the orphans."
She turned to Bunny.
"Jesus, Bunny,
don't look at me."
As if on cue, Maggie hopped up onto the high stool adjacent to him. Tara looked at the dog's happy face. She didn't look like she'd hurt a fly.
"I'll get them sausages."
Maggie leaned forward and gulped down the lump of hash in 1 fluid motion, cling film and all.
"Holy fuck, he's up there, Janis Joplin," exclaimed Bunny.
He turned to face Maggie, who was panting happily away on the stool beside him. She looked calmly back at him. It was accepted Dublin criminal lore that due to his unnervingly wonky eye, nobody, not even the hardest nutbags on God's green earth, could stay locked in a stare with Bunny McGarry. Until now. After what seemed like an eternity, Bunny turned back to his pint and took a long pull on it. He then smacked his lips and regarded the half-empty glass as if seeing it for the first time.
"You know, one of us is going to have to be good cop."
Maggie licked her chops and belched.
"We'll work on that."
Thanks for listening to The Bunnycast. If you'd like to hear more, then please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts, as that way we know you want them to continue. The audiobooks of all the Dublin Trilogy are available from Audible, iTunes, and anywhere else audiobooks are sold. This podcast is written and presented by me, Cuaoimh McDonald, with the stories being read by Morgan C. Jones. The audiobook production is by Sound Entertaining Limited. Podcast production is by Richard Massera, with the artwork done by Wonderwife. Copyright everything bar the music, McFory Inc. 2018. And speaking of the music, the killer track you're hearing right now is from Honour Among Thieves, a new band that is a merger of the Bible Code Sundays and Brand New Zeros. Do check them out.